All right, guys, welcome back to the newest episode of the Fantasy Crossover Podcast. I am your host, Brian Acevedo, joined by my co-host, Danny Duarte. We pick back up. The conference finals are just about halfway done now. We've seen quite a few highlights. Obviously, last night, the Andrew Wiggins posterization of Luka Doncic. Obviously, we saw the Warriors pull to 3-0. Tonight, we have game 4 of Heat Celtics. So we just really wanted to go through the two series going on, cover some other additional NBA news, like draft lottery stuff, and then get to watching this Heat Celtics game, which I do have a feeling that the Celtics are going to win this game 4. It's a must win. Dan, what are some of your observations from games 2, 1, 2, and 3? Because we haven't really spoken since the series started.
Yeah, guys, something I want to point out to everyone is get yourselves a friend like Brian is to me. Just whenever the Heat are not doing so hot, he'll go ahead and, you know, text me a little gif and just ask kind of like a sarcastic question and leave it at that.
That was one time. It was about Bam Adebayo, which in fairness, he had been a no-show, but, you know, when Robert Williams is not playing now, it's a different story.
All right, you've done it a couple times. But anyways, apart from that, I think that the Heat have honestly been a little bit surprising in the series, given the level of competition that they've brought against the Celtics. I think no one in the media expected this level of like intensity and competitiveness from the Heat. You know, people are still undermining the Heat, and it's a little bit of my mini rant, but every time that the Heat win, it's because Boston failed rather than from a perspective of the Heat executed properly. So I just think that's a little ironic. I am curious to see, just with Tyler Hero being out for game 4 and with Robert Williams being back, how the Heat attack Boston moving forward. I agree with you. It's a game 4 must win situation for Boston. I'm also a little bit more leaning towards Boston taking this game, but I was shocked that the Heat pulled out game 3. So I wouldn't be surprised if they pull out game 4 as well. I'm still sticking to my seven game series with Miami taking it at the end of the day. I think you can agree with me at this point that the Celtics have been too inconsistent, kind of showing signs of what Philly did, where they're not disciplined enough. And ultimately, like, it's just too many up and downs, hot and cold, whereas Miami's been riding a lot more of the consistent wave. I think that's ultimately what's going to push them through. I think that the Heat are the more well-rounded, constructed team, but Boston's clearly the more talented team. But I trust the coaching and the discipline more.
Yeah, and I would say I will give the Heat some credit here. When watching the last three games, it does feel like Miami wants it a little bit more. That's just based off what I'm seeing. It just, like you mentioned with the turnovers for Boston, they've been sloppy, especially their top two guys in Tatum and Brown. Tatum, especially game 3, and even Jaylen Brown putting up 40 points, but then having all those turnovers that really kind of cost them at the end. Also missing free throws, just little things that just, let's be real, Dan, like championship teams, they got to nail down. And Miami being such a strong defensive team, I think it kind of plays right into their hands. I don't know, Dan. I don't want to call it load management because I do believe that these have been real injuries. But I can't help but think how, I guess, lucky because they've been good. But like Miami's been very lucky in the sense of being able to sit Tyler Hero for a game, or, you know, obviously Jimmy Butler misses a half, Kyle Lowry misses time. And like, it's like you have Victor Oladipo coming off the bench and then Duncan can give you some minutes. Obviously Max Strus has been a guy that I'm starting to give a lot of credit to, Dan. Like, he's playing really well. He's shooting the ball really well. I've seen what you're saying about the media and the way that, you know, Miami's being portrayed. I can't argue it, but I definitely am giving them credit now. Like, I see it. There'd be no surprise if Miami wins the series for sure.
Yeah. I think that, you know, everyone's still bearish on the Heat. Everyone still has them losing at the end of the day, even with them kind of overcoming odds. And I just like them for the simple fact of it's a disciplined team. They don't complain. They just get to it. I mean, the free throw disparity in game 3 should have been a telltale sign that they should have lost that game. Point blank, the end. But, you know, they're disciplined. They stuck to their guns. They kept to, you know, their ways of just we live and die by the 3 and intensity. And, you know, they pulled it out. I think that is going to be the reason they make the finals. Their consistency, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing with living with that three-point shot is, like, you're at the mercy of that. Like, when you hit 21 threes in a game, you're more likely going to win, but then there's going to be nights where it's not falling and, like, you just keep going to it because then you fall behind. I think that's a part of why we've seen kind of some blowouts in this series. Like, a lot of it is kind of dependent on who's hitting from perimeter, and obviously Miami had that strong third quarter in game one that kind of pretty much won them that game, because outside of that, I thought Boston outplayed them, but now game three, Miami outplayed them in a must-win game. I was really impressed with how Miami came and bounced back. They didn't wait for it to go down 2-1. They immediately corrected it. I think, kind of like Jimmy Butler touched on, I think they kind of felt embarrassed. And I think not having Robert Williams 100% helped. And we saw Bam Adebayo go off, Dan. My question really is, we know what Jimmy Butler's going to give you. What is Bam Adebayo going to give us for the rest of the series?
I'm convinced that a factor people are overlooking right now is the Kyle Lowry effect. I think that Kyle Lowry coming back and just facilitating the offense definitely helps Bam a lot more than Jimmy facilitating the offense or even Gabe Vincent. I mean, Lowry can thread the needle better than both those players, and he can also just pick up the pace a lot better. Jimmy's more of a half-court guy, whereas Kyle Lowry can push the pace and the tempo, complete full-court style. That actually plays into Bam Adebayo's strengths. I mean, he's not as big and, you know, as I don't want to use the word tough, but like gritty, so to speak, as Robert Williams in the paint. So he has to use his speed and his skill set a lot more to exploit the Boston defense. I think Kyle Lowry is going to have that effect on this Heat team. And I don't think it's a complete undeniable trend or correlation that Kyle Lowry coming back was Bam Adebayo's best game. I do agree with you. Robert Williams being out definitely impacted it, but I still think with Williams there, Bam still would have had a great game of like a 20-plus outing.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I think it's interesting that tonight, you know, obviously game four, not really a must-win for Miami, and not having Tyler Hero in the lineup, of how is that going to affect their offense, especially, you know, coming off the bench and stuff like that. That's going to be something, I think, to really watch for tonight. How do you think they're going to respond without Hero?
I think that they're going to rely a lot more heavily on Victor Oladipo, which that's a really good six-man backup option, if you ask me, more so on the defensive end than actual scoring end. But, you know, I don't want to sound bad, but Tyler Hero hasn't had a good series. I mean, he's been shooting very poorly from the field the entire series. I think that his presence is more so the factor than his actual effectiveness. Boston's a little bit more scared of him, what he can do rather than what he has been doing. So I think that the other guys with the Heat, you know, the Duncan Robinsons, the Cody Martin or the Caleb Martins rather, you know, they pick up the slack for Hero being out. But Miami's got a great 7-8 man rotation, so I just don't see a lot changing.
Yeah, a lot of folks are still sleeping on Miami, man. I mean, at this point, they're, you know, two wins away from the NBA Finals. So if you're sleeping on them, it's time to wake up, guys. So we'll see. Obviously, Danny is very excited about the prospects. And let me tell you, Dan, if they end up making the finals, we may have to make a visit out to, you know, the old AAA, the FTX Arena out there.
Would you say that Boston would lose this because they haven't been as disciplined as they should be?
I mean, no, I think that's a tough question. I would say it's kind of 50-50. It's part of it is on Boston not being disciplined, but Miami also capitalizes on the mistakes. I mean, they're not a team that is going to allow you to make mistakes and still beat them. The talent disparity is not that big like maybe it was in the first round.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, I think that Boston probably has, if you ask me, three of the top five players in this series. But, you know, Miami just, they execute.
Yeah, and I think Miami's just as deep. So I don't think it's a huge, I think these teams are actually pretty evenly aligned, and it's going to come down to how is Jason Tatum going to bounce back, obviously from a really bad game three. So we'll see how it goes tonight. We have another series, though. It does look like it's coming to an end pretty soon here. It looks like the Golden State Warriors just completely kind of outmatching the Dallas Mavericks. They're up 3-0 in the series now. Steph Curry, guys, what else can you say? He looked great yesterday, had 30 plus points. His team did as well. This is now 26 straight playoff series with a road win for the Golden State Warriors. This, to me, is basically a dynasty, even though they have had their little break due to injuries and all that. I mean, if you look at from where this core started to where they're at now, I mean, Dan, that this to me is has been a team to definitely kind of marvel at how they've progressed over the years. And now they have all these young pieces like Kuminga, Moody. I mean, some of these guys are not even getting minutes in the conference finals. And like, you just feel like they could easily step up if they had to because of all the run they got in the regular season. Dan, just going to ask you straight up, and I want to get your perspective. Are the Golden State Warriors the favorites to win it all, or should they be?
I don't think so. I think that the team coming out of the East is my favorite to win it all. And, you know, it's not even if the Heat win. Like, I think Boston would probably be just the better team versus the Warriors. I don't know what it is, man. Like, just when I watch the Warriors, I think that they have great chemistry. I just question if Kevon Looney can go off for a double-double against, you know, a better big, so to speak. And, you know, if Andrew Wiggins can maintain such a high scoring average against better wing defenders. I don't want to make it sound like they haven't accomplished much. I mean, they're in the conference finals for a reason, but I just don't know if they've gone up against a team that has such strong defensive intensity as like teams coming out of the East.
I'm going to disagree with you, Dan. I think when you look at the Warriors, there's a team that's on the precipice of making their sixth final in eight seasons. I think there's, I know that I'm looking at the history here a little bit, and I'm respecting the fact the Heat are really good, the Celtics are really good. I think that there's no doubt the Golden State Warriors should be the favorite. If you look at the way this team is, and I kind of touched on it with all the young pieces that kind of came in and like give you replenishments, the trio of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green barely played together at all during the regular season. So they finished third in the West, but we really didn't get a chance to see them at full strength until the playoffs started. You know, obviously Klay missed the first half of the season. Draymond had the herniated disc about midseason, and then Steph missed the last 3 weeks of the season right when Draymond came back. So I think we're seeing a team that is finally at its full strength. They didn't have to put as many miles because of the games that they missed. And obviously older legs can always appreciate that. And I just say it definitively, like Dallas is definitely not coming back in this series. And I think that the offense, the ball movement of the Golden State Warriors, plus the championship experience. I mean, look, there's no question they could have some poor shooting games in the finals. The Heat and Celtics are really great defensive teams. So I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibility, but I am arguing the fact that I think they are the best team left, and I think they should be considered the favorites.
Let's flip the script a little bit, though. What are your takes on Dallas? I mean, we're giving Golden State all these props, rightfully so, but what about Dallas? Luka Doncic now garners 8 games in the playoffs with over 40 points, but it comes with a 2-6 record. So I think I asked this question to you earlier in the postseason. Do you think that the Mavs can win with Luka playing this way? Like, is his brand of basketball in the playoffs sustainable? I mean, what, you know, I agree with you. Dallas is probably going home. If not next game, probably the game after that. How do they pivot? How do they pick it right back up and try to make the conference finals and the finals next year?
So I think you need to upgrade for sure the number 2 position. Jalen Brunson has been really good. Spencer Dinwiddie has had some games where he looks like he could be the second best player. But to me, I need a more legitimate, bona fide guy. Don't get me wrong. I could see Luka winning a championship as the 1A, 1B player. Like, he will be the guy and kind of like a Dirk Nowitzki type title run. But I don't think it's the best setup for the way the Dallas Mavericks should go. Like I said, I would probably move on from a Dinwiddie and try to package maybe with picks, although I don't think they have many picks, honestly. But I would try to get a better player to kind of align with Luka, probably a 2-way type player. Just throwing it out, in a perfect world, a Jaylen Brown or a Paul George. I know those guys are not available, but that's the type of talent I think you're going to need as a second best player with a Luka Doncic. That's just me personally. Reggie Bullock really kind of shit the bed last night, Dan. I mean, you saw the goose egg performance. That you just can't have that. I mean, it's, look, you can blame Luka to an extent, but when your teammate goes 0-10 in a conference final game, it's tough to overcome, especially when you're playing the Golden State Warriors. I will say, though, I'm surprised, Dan, that they haven't gotten a game yet. Obviously, the series is not over, but if Memphis could get two, if they get swept by the Warriors, to me, it shows like you still have a little bit more ways to go than you thought.
Yeah, and just to echo on your point, like add some more context, Reggie Bullock played 40 minutes and laid a goose egg.
Where's the accountability to Jason Kidd? Like, hey, it's game three. This is must win. Like, obviously, we've given Jason Kidd a ton of praise for getting them to the conference finals. But to me, like some of these guys, Dinwiddie should have gotten more shots. He was red hot. Like, they couldn't stop him. And it just felt like Bullock kept getting shots. And it's almost like they were funneling it to him. Like, they wanted Reggie Bullock to get the shot off and, you know, played right into their strategy towards the end.
I mean, I get it. They want to get their three-point shooter going. I agree with you. The game plan could have been a little bit better. But going back to your original point, I think that a player to be on the lookout for would be a big man, a Mitchell Robinson-type player, a Rudy Gobert. I think that Kristaps Porzingis, one, was too injured, and two, just couldn't really fit because he's a spot-up shooter. He doesn't really play with his back to the basket. I would like to see Luka with a pick and roll dynamic center that just lives in the post. I would just want to see that experiment and how it goes, because right now he's surrounded by 3-point centers, Maxi Kleber, Dwight Powell, and it's not working out. Let's see how it is with a big man.
Yeah, I agree. My concern with Mitchell Robinson as a Knicks fan is that for the money that Dallas would probably have to pay him, you're not going to get enough offensive production. Obviously, his efficiency is crazy high because all he does is alley-oops. But I think that in a playoff series, that can kind of be exposed because you kind of anticipate it. So I think that would be, while I get what you're saying, I think a big could definitely help them defensively, kind of having that anchor down low. I do wonder if Mitchell Robinson would be one of the better fits, I guess you could say. So we'll end up seeing what ends up happening there. But Luka with a big, I think you need some sort of jump shooting if you're going to pair a big with Luka, even if it's a defensive anchor.
Let's wait and see, Brian. Also, we just got a quick update. Marcus Smart is out for game four. Ooh. Sprained ankle. I kind of saw this one coming. I mean, people thought that because he came back on the court, he was going to be okay after that really bad ankle sprain. But guys, that was just the adrenaline. That was just the muscle still hadn't cooled down and just essentially swollen up yet. So this was no surprise to me. It was a pretty bad sprain. I was shocked he was able to play, but definitely needs to rest it for at least this game.
Yeah, props to Marcus Smart, by the way, for fighting through it and coming back. I know a lot of people were making fun of it on Twitter and stuff, but I mean, for him to come back and actually play well after that injury, I mean, that says a lot, and it sucks that he's missing tonight. I will say, Dan, a lot of players have missed games, like important players in this series already. It's like these teams really haven't been full strength since game one, so just kind of sucks. This is part of the deal once you make it this late into the season, but I do wish these teams were, you know, full strength so we could really compare and see. But I mean, with guys like Robert Williams and Marcus Smart missing two games already this series, you know, Kyle Lowry missed two games, Jimmy Butler sat for the half, Tyler Hero's out tonight, it's tough. It hopefully the final result we don't take with a grain of salt, hopefully. But real quick with Luka, the last thing I wanted to touch on with him is his conditioning, to me, Dan, is not where it needs to be a championship player. I think that's the one thing I really want to see him focus on. Obviously, the defensive effort, I think, was a little bit better in this playoffs compared to last couple of playoffs. But my thing with him is I think he needs to be better conditioned to be able to deal with playing 40, 45 minutes per game, 7-game series against the best defenses in the league. That's what I want to see Luka focus on, like if you're looking at where he can develop, because we know what he can do. I think that's the last step, one of the final steps I want to see him get to.
Yeah, that defense just needs to pick it up, man. I think part of it is due to conditioning, but he needs to be a two-way player. He just can't be dynamic in one sense.
Yeah, so we'll end up seeing what happens there. We both kind of agree that series is likely over and Golden State will probably be advancing to the finals. So obviously we've kind of covered the four teams that are still remaining. We did get some other side note NBA news that we did want to go through. So the draft lottery was the last night we recorded. Orlando Magic ended up winning that draft lottery. They are going to have the number one pick. First time I think they've had it since Dwight Howard back in 2004. So this to me, Dan, there's a lot of years where there's a clear cut number one, right? There's a LeBron James, there's a, you know, et cetera, et cetera. In this class, I don't feel like there's a clear cut number one. I know it feels like a lot of folks out there have preferences. You know, obviously you hear Chet Holmgren has been linked to them, Jabari Smith. You know, do you have any thoughts on some of these top guys and who Orlando might take for the with the first pick?
I'm convinced that they're going to go with Chet Holmgren, just based off of the fact that he has a strong relationship with Jalen Suggs. I think that Orlando, for whatever reason, is going to factor that in. And also, they seem to have an affinity for drafting big men in the first round. I mean, they have a bunch of big men on their roster. Mo Bamba is the one that comes to mind, Jonathan Isaac. So I could see them drafting Chet Holmgren, which to me, he's not the player I would draft if I was, you know, drafting number one. I would go with Jabari Smith. He seems like the more NBA-ready player. So let's wait and see. Let's wait and see how this guy develops. But all I can say is that Sam Presti, if you somehow manage to get Jabari Smith, oh my God.
Yeah, I would say with Chet Holmgren, my thoughts on him just from watching him this year, I think he could be boom or bust. I mean, he's obviously going to have to put a lot of weight on, but we know like he kind of gives me Porzingis vibes a little bit. But it's possible he could be even better than that defensively because he had a lot of multi-block games in college. So we'll see. I do think Orlando could better use a guy like Jabari Smith with their current roster setup. I do think when you have the number one pick, though, you got to take the best player available. And it does look like Orlando has a lot of guards and a couple of bigs. So I personally think Jabari Smith would be a better way to go as well at number one. But I don't know. I'm hearing a lot of rumors about Holmgren being the guy that they're definitely targeting. So
yeah, I'm like, I don't want to jump to conclusions because I like to give guys benefit of the doubt, but I'm definitely very skeptical on Chet Holmgren's superstar potential, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. And then lastly, we did get some new news from the Lakers camp. Obviously, they're doing interviews for their new head coach position. It looks like they're going with two finalists so far. Terry Stotts, the old Portland Trailblazers head coach, and a guy that Danny and I spoke about a lot at length on one of our recent pods, Darvin Ham. It looks like those two guys are the front runners. Dan, any new thoughts on this situation? And do you think Darvin Ham is finally going to get that call to become the new head coach of the Lakers?
I really hope so. Terry Stotts is a terrible head coach, in my opinion. He just didn't accomplish much with the Trailblazers. That being said, none of this really matters if LA can't get out of their own way. What I mean by that is, you know, keep Phil Jackson like at bay. Don't let him interfere with day-to-day operations. You also have to keep the Rambises out. I don't even know why they should be relevant, but here we are talking about them. And Rob Pelinka needs to have more accountability. This is just pathetic, the fact that his name hasn't been mentioned once for everything going on there. So at the end of the day, I want Darvin Ham to be successful. I want the Lakers to, you know, be entertaining, be successful once again. But none of this is going to matter if the front office and ownership can't, you know, get out of their own way.
Yeah, and it's tough because this is, you know, the franchise of the NBA. So we do want to see them bounce back. And with all the star power they have, you know, it's just good for the league when the Lakers are in the playoffs. Even though I know a lot of you guys were happy they're out of it and you don't have to hear about LeBron, but there's no doubt their presence definitely still lingers in the background. And we did see a mock trade. I posted it on the Instagram. Dan, I wanted to get your thoughts just because it's so wacky, but I don't know. It'd be kind of cool to see if it was to happen in real life. And it would be the Brooklyn Nets and the LA Lakers doing a trade. So the Lakers would trade LeBron James to the Brooklyn Nets, pairing him obviously up with KD and Kyrie. And the Lakers would receive Ben Simmons, Nicholas Claxton, Cam Thomas, and two first round picks. Dan, who wins that deal?
Oh my God, it's the Nets without a doubt. You get a guaranteed superstar that's still highly productive in his 20th year, whereas the Lakers get a center that can't make that has the playoff record for most missed free throws in a game, a player that we don't know if he's ever going to play another NBA game again. A pretty solid player in Cam Thomas, and two first round picks that would probably be late first round picks if the Nets, you know, got it going. That's a no brainer to me. If I were the Nets, I would jump at that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I will say, though, even at their current age, it would be so cool to see LeBron and KD team up, even if it's for one season, just to see what they could do. I think it would be just awesome to watch, but probably not realistic. I don't think the Lakers do that deal at all. I think, if anything, it sounds like they're going to commit to Russell Westbrook. It sounds like in a lot of the interviews they did, it's like, hey, how are you going to use Westbrook? What's your plan? It sounds like they didn't get many buyers as far as trades, which we're not surprised about at all. So they're going to have to stick with him for another year, or at least through the trade deadline. So let's see what ends up happening. But other than that, guys, we appreciate you listening to the pod. Dan, do you have any final thoughts before we sign off for game four of Heat Celtics?
No, you know, just Heat fans, Heat Nation. Let's prove these skaters wrong.
Oh, man.
You know, Heat to the finals. Let's you know, the rest of the NBA media is talking smack. So let's prove them wrong.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of these Heat fans on when I'm on the Crossover Podcast Twitter. Like, I'm seeing a lot of Heat fans complaining about not getting respect and the national media. This,
so. I mean, you're seeing it though, like, you know.
Yeah, I guess. I guess. I think you guys are just, no need to be so sensitive. Look, you want the respect, go earn it. Go win the championship. That's the way.
Oh, they're up 2-1, and
series not over, my friend. The Suns were up 3-1 also. So. You know,
man, we don't have Chris Paul on our team, thankfully.
Yes, of course. You've got the healthy Kyle Lowry at your disposal. That's true.
No, it's not much better, but TP's got that curse.
Facts. But other than that, guys, make sure you follow the pod on social media, Fantasy Crossover Podcast. Feel free to DM us. We've got a couple ongoing conversations with some listeners, so we appreciate you guys and obviously always listening. Hopefully the next time we come back to you, we'll hopefully be right around the end of conference finals, before NBA finals. So can't wait to see what ends up happening with these games, and we'll talk to you guys soon.